Now, the one who protects us all from prattling prognosticators and perfidious pundits.
I say, America, stay out the bushes.
Look for the union label.
And to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the government.
From my cold, dead hands.
I'm concerned that if we don't impeach this president, he will get reelected.
It's time for the Alan Nathan Show. Here he is, the longest-running nationally syndicated centrist host in the country, Alan Nathan.
Welcome, everyone, to the Alan Nathan Show, home of militant moderation, where we want the Republicans out of our bedrooms, the Democrats out of our wallets, and both out of our First and Second Amendment rights. I'm John Hayward, Deputy National Security Editor of Breitbart News, sitting in for Alan today while he's on assignment. Please check our website at alannathan.com for our podcasts and our show times. Well, some really awful news broke right as we're coming to air today. There's been a shooting at a Catholic church in Minneapolis, Minnesota, the Annunciation Catholic Church. It's a church with a school attached to it. Not many details as of yet. Apparently, the individual that perpetrated this just opened fire through the stained glass windows of the church, apparently injured or killed at least 20 people. They're saying two dead right now, and then the shooter killed himself. And then they're going to tally up the rest, and we'll see how it goes. Fingers crossed, prayers out for everyone that was involved in this. Hopefully the wounded will recover. President Trump issued a statement about the shooting shortly a little while ago and said he was aware of it. The FBI is on the scene and investigating. Not many details known about the shooter publicly as of yet, except that he is dead. He killed himself outside of the church, and he was male because of several reports have referred to him as being male. Not much else that we know just now. Anyway, when a story like this breaks, the 48-hour rule should always be in effect, which is basically wait 48 hours before you jump on any provocative tidbit of news that pops through the internet. We've so many times now seen stories like this pop out, and the early reports may be wrong or incorrect, or people float information that isn't really true, and you just don't know. It's going to take a little time before anything solid is released to the public. So I would advise against jumping against every scrap of information about this that you see on social media until it's pretty well verified, and we have a better handle on who did this and why. And I'm sure in the coming days we will find out. But you know what's going to happen next. Everybody and their brother on social media is going to announce that they know who this was, and they found his webpage and his Facebook page and his X account, and here's everything he said. And maybe they'll have the wrong person. That's happened. So again, don't ruin anybody's life here until we know what's actually happening. It's harder and harder to do that in the modern information age, to just be patient and wait for confirmed details to come out. And it's partially because we have this fire hose of information from social media blasting us in the face all the time, and it influences journalists too. Journalists will quick run to air with information they see on social media because they want to keep the coverage going. They got to feed the beast, so they'll run with pretty much anything they see, and they won't always do a lot to validate it and make sure that they have it right. We've had countless stories of shootings and crimes and so on where the press has misidentified the perpetrator or said things about them that were speculative that turned out not to be true because they have to go out there and make a comment. And very often when people rush to judgment like this, they're going to tend to believe information that fits their priors. So people, especially journalists, they have agendas, they have things they believe about the world. And when they see information that seems to fit that agenda and helps to explain an event through the lens of their existing beliefs, well, they just grab that and run with it sometimes, you know, and they don't always take enough time to verify it. So let us see how this turns out. But in somewhat lighter-hearted news, hopefully we'll change gears from that. And of course, the big story that has consumed a lot of our culture over the last couple of days is the saga of Cracker Barrel, which apparently came to an end yesterday because Cracker Barrel threw in the towel. They said they're not going to go ahead with this controversial rebranding scheme that they were putting into place. They were making all their restaurants look very bland and taking out all the cool little tchotchkes and bric-a-brac that used to make them fun and cool. And they were changing their logo to drop the old guy leaning on a Cracker Barrel. That was their icon for all these years. And they've reversed course on all of that due to public outrage. And they did very smart when they did this. Cracker Barrel has done a lot of dumb things over the past few years, really. And this attempted destruction of their own brand is just the capper from a lot of bad decisions. But somebody over there is now awake at the switch because they did something very smart. They told Donald Trump about it. They made a point of contacting the White House And they told Trump, hey, you know, we listened to what you had to say, because he'd weighed in. Trump had weighed in on this and said he wasn't happy with what Cracker Barrel was doing. And they said, we heard the people. We heard what you said. And we're not going to do the rebrand. We're going to stick with the tried and true. Thanks a lot for your input, that kind of thing. And Trump, of course, immediately declared victory. And his White House had a field day with it. They put out a modified version of the Cracker Barrel logo where Trump is leaning on the Cracker Barrel instead of the old guy that's been their mascot all these years. So that was clever. You know, because whoever did this must have known that if you bring Trump into the story, he's going to talk about it. And he has a titanic reach through conventional and social media. So that was a great way for them to get a quick jolt of positive press after days and days of grinding bad news. Now, I know people don't like Donald Trump are groaning and rolling their eyes and saying, oh, God, why did he get involved in this? And why would Cracker Barrel make it sound like he defeated them in some kind of culture war smackdown and brought them under his? And if you don't like Trump and you don't like any of this, I guess that's an understandable take, but it was smart PR for Cracker Barrel to get Trump in here to use his megaphone to blast out the news that they were changing. And this is a running problem with corporations. It's happening a lot. Cracker Barrel is just the latest higher profile example. Of course, everybody thinks back to Bud Light and its disastrous rebranding attempt to go with a transsexual spokesperson for the beer, and that just destroyed them. They've never recaptured anything close to the market share they lost after they did that. It just destroyed their brand. Stores like Target got in a lot of trouble for getting political and getting involved in gay rights and transsexualism, and their customers said, no thanks, you know, on any of that. So Target's in trouble. And there's a whole bunch of stores, a whole bunch of chains that have done things like that. And then, of course, right before Cracker Barrel, you had everyone being obsessed with the chain that seemingly got it right, which would be American Eagle Outfitters, because they sell clothes and they sell blue jeans. So they went out and they got a actress named Sydney Sweeney, who's very popular with the guys, and they had her advertise their jeans. And it was a gigantic success. But somehow it turned into this culture war battle. And a lot has been said about that and why the left was so angry that Sydney Sweeney did this innocuous jeans ad. You know, one particular reason they dove all over it, because she talked about having good jeans, and it was a play on words, good jeans that I'm wearing, and I have good jeans, and that's why I look like this. And somehow the left decided she's a crypto Nazi or something because she said that. So they were beside themselves. But there is a common thread running through all of these stories about rebranding, and you could loop in Hollywood. And a lot of Hollywood studios to this. Disney, Hollywood studio Disney, made a big splash a couple of days ago by saying that they were going to begin working hard to get young men back into their audience. And supposedly they've got all kinds of pitches they're going to get from movie makers, studios, writers for products they can put out that will bring back the young male voter. And that was kind of remarkable that they would say it in public, because until now they've been denying that they did anything to alienate the young male voter. And if they did, well, it's the young male voter's problem for not understanding how wonderful and enlightened and progressive Disney's entertainment schedule was. And who needs those grubby Neanderthals anyway? It turns out Disney needs them because they're going to try to get young men back as their customers. A lot of this rebranding stuff is really kind of about young men. When you get right down to it, there is a whole political corporate culture, and the two things are entwined. Culture is hyper-politicized today. I wish it wasn't, but it is. So culture is routinely used as a wedge, as a club, to batter political points home. Politicians routinely try to use popular culture to market themselves. So this is all one conversation. We're talking about the common culture, pop culture, restaurants, food, movies, clothes. It's all kind of the same thing that we're talking about. And the unifying thread running through a lot of this is that at some point, corporate America, being politicized, being largely in league with the Democrat Party, who had politicized them and co-opted CEOs, and you had all these woke consultants and executives filtering into these companies and politicizing the hell out of them. And the one thing they really don't like is young men, especially young white men. If you're not white and you're a young man, they have a little patience for you. But if you're a young white guy, you're evil. Like, you know, you're subhuman. They're not interested in marketing to you. And they think that marketing to you was driving away other audiences. See, that's where a lot of this comes from. The geniuses who destroyed Star Wars and destroyed Indiana Jones and destroyed Marvel superheroes and all these other brands that have been immolated over the last couple of years, they all got it into their heads that if you market entertainment and make it to appeal to young white men, you're alienating everybody else. and you're driving away all the other audiences. And I tell you, they devoutly believe this. This is almost like religious writ on the part of the people who are making these decisions. And so they thought, well, if we stop marketing stuff to young white men, in fact, if we deliberately make everything so that young white men feel excluded, so that this isn't really for you, well, they'll still show up anyway because young white men are stupid and they have money to burn, and we'll get everybody else back into our audience. And you can see this as a palpable thing in popular culture entertainments over the last couple of years with all the girl bosses and gender swapping and all the stuff that they've done. They were sending out a signal that young white men were not welcome anymore, and they just assumed they would keep coming anyway and they would get everybody else. And it didn't work, not even close, because not only did the young white men go away and stay away because they felt unwelcome, but the other audiences didn't show up either. Neither the mythical progressive woke audience nor anybody else. And a Cracker Barrel is just the latest demonstration of that. I'm John Hayward, sitting in for Alan today. We'll be right back with more of the Alan Nathan Show.
Everyone's using it, but not everyone is talking about it, and that's AI in the workplace. Kelsey Warren, founder of the Seamless Coach LLC, shares why many employees say they're keeping this, along with their feelings about other technologies, to themselves, and what business and IT leaders can learn.
According to new research from Cox Business, 60% of Gen Z and millennials feel positive about the growing role of AI at work and use AI tools for everything from summarizing meetings to creative brainstorming. But about half of both groups are nervous to admit how much the role of AI technology plays in their productivity. Fear of job loss and uncertainty about companies' AI policies factor into employees' hesitancy to speak up. The survey also revealed that despite being confident in their ability to adopt new technology, nearly 70% feel overwhelmed by the number of tools they're expected to use at work.
For more information and to see the full survey, visit coxblue.com/workplace-tech-survey.
The spirit of Fred Rogers lives on when two hit spinoffs of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood come together for the first time. The Emmy-winning puppet series Don Quixote will welcome friends from the Emmy-winning Daniel Tiger's Neighborhood in a new crossover special premiering August 11th on PBS Kids. In Daniel Tiger Visits Someplace Else, Daniel Tiger meets Don Quixote, and the new pals embark on an epic adventure full of fun and surprises. The special episode even includes a new version of the classic Fred Rogers' song Look and Listen, which encourages young viewers to ask questions to get to know someone better. Don Quixote co-executive producer Kristen DiQualo.
Bringing Don Quixote and Daniel Tiger together in this special has been a really exciting way for us to build on the legacy of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, which inspires everything that we do. And I can't wait for families to see Daniel in the colorful, joyful world of Someplace Else with Donkey and her pals.
The Don Quixote crossover special begins streaming Monday, August 11th on PBS Kids.
What I know about courage, I learned from my adoptive mom. She said sometimes you just gotta hold on. And know we'll get through this.
Mom, we are so high up.
Hold my hand.
No, you hold my hand.
Here we go.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to find out more.
I learned patience from my adoptive dad. All he had to say was,
"Hey, you got this. Just breathe." Hey, we're pretty good.
Yeah.
Might have to start a band.
I got it.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to find out more. This message is brought to you by AdoptUSKids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
The mission of Paralyzed Veterans of America is clear. Accessibility. Veterans who have served and sacrificed the best of themselves deserve access to the best our country has to offer. Access to meaningful employment. Access to the veterans' benefits they've earned. Accessible homes and vehicles. And access to every part of their communities. With PVA staff working inside VA hospitals, no other veterans organization has provided more real-time, ongoing support for paralyzed veterans and their families. PVA is proud to serve veterans across all branches, all generations, and all conflicts. Our nation's heroes fought for your independence. Join PVA in fighting for theirs at PVA.org.
Welcome back to the Alan Nathan Show. I'm your guest host today, John Hayward, Deputy National Security Editor for Breitbart News. The Democratic National Committee is having a summer meeting to cope with the many problems of the Democrat Party. Their brand has become deeply unpopular. They're hemorrhaging millions of voters in states across the country. They have no leadership, no appealing candidates whatsoever. And frankly, Donald Trump just keeps making fools out of them by tricking them into taking the unpopular side of every issue that comes down the pipe. And so far, I would have to say from what I've seen that the DNC summer meeting is not going all that well, because the only thing I hear coming out of it is these guys convincing themselves that they have to become an even bigger band of extremist lunatics in order to win the voters back. If they just scream a little louder that Trump is Hitler, why, people will start loving them again. And I just don't think that's going to do it. Here with us to talk about it is Captain Douglas Ernest, U.S. Army retired, a Desert Storm veteran, an entrepreneur, and author of The Spirit of a True Patriot, the inspiring story of retired Captain Douglas J. Ernest. Welcome to the Alan Nathan Show.
John, it is an absolute pleasure to be with you. I'm a big fan. I've been reading your editorials on Breitbart for years, and I just want to say kudos. I love your work.
Oh, thank you so much. It's so very kind of you to say. I really love hearing the people who are reading the work.
I love it. I've always read you instill capitalism and freedom and conservative views in everything you write. And you also talk about the fairness of listening to both sides. And that's not something you see in conservative news outlets. So I just want to applaud you before we talk about other items.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. Capitalism really is my bag. I'm a very ardent defender of capitalism, not just as an economic system, but I think it leads naturally to government, to democracy, to free republics, and so on. And I think it's all tied in together. I think without capitalism, you end up getting authoritarianism. And when I hear the Democrats screaming and yelling that Trump is an authoritarian, I'm pretty sensitive to authoritarianism, and I just don't see it. I mean, he's doing things they don't like, and he acts very decisively, but so far, there's not the slightest whiff of him doing anything authoritarian at all, as opposed to the Democrats, who I think have become very authoritarian in character over the last few years.
Yeah, and I had read something on Breitbart the last couple of days. I don't recall the exact article, but the article said something about if Trump makes successful moves that makes them look bad and shows that he's right, so they do everything they can to destroy his momentum and stop his inertia, even if it's at the cost of American people's lives and American people's freedoms and rights.
And I don't think that works too well. I was very highly critical of Barack Obama when he was president, and I had a lot of bones to pick with him. But sometimes I thought there was a tendency on people on the other side, on the Republican side, to kind of do that, to criticize every single thing he said and did in the strongest possible terms. And I thought, you know, keep your powder dry and make the arguments where they count would be a better strategy. And Democrats are doing that in spades, because as you pointed out, they're doing things like opposing Trump, literally saving lives. In Washington, D.C., I was told Black Lives Matter. And nobody in this country has saved more lives over the last 2 weeks that were black than Donald J. Trump with his crackdown in D.C. And yet the Democrats are attacking him as like he's some kind of a dictator for keeping people safe.
Yeah, you know, we have complete different policy and ideological differences. You know, the democratic institutions is based on, you know, supposed to be based on capitalism, supposed to be based on, you know, freedom, supposed to be based on, you know, helping people work. And instead, they've just shifted this party to the extreme left. And they are constantly, they don't hold themselves accountable. And when they try to hold themselves accountable, there's this big fight within the infighting of the Democrats, as you can see today. You know, there's an article I remember reading, I believe it was on Breitbart again last night, about Hollywood stopped their vocal. But Hollywood's not even speaking out about all the atrocities of the Donald Trump administration. They're silent. The donors are not putting in money. And my belief, John, is we're watching the Democratic Party crumble right before our eyes. We haven't had a murder in Washington, D.C. in 2 weeks. Instead of getting up on stage and saying, great job, maybe this should work. What else can we do to save American lives? What can we do to stop letting these kids that are shooting each other, killing each other, give them a chance, give them a fair shot to have a good life and take care of our families and give a chance to have an opportunity like every American people, instead of fighting and bloodshed in the streets? they counteract it, and they say how bad it is. They say how we're moving towards this authoritarianism. But we understand the American people have seen through it, and that's why you can see the Democratic rolls. They're down 2 million. The Republican rolls are up 2 million, and that's before the gerrymandering and the redistricting. So you can see the conservative movement is strong, not only amongst us older folks in our 50s, but also among the younger generation that I talk to. Everybody is getting on board, because this is what's good for the American people. And this is what's going to, you know, in my opinion, save America. If we would have not had a Trump administration take control of the realm, our country might have been gone, because some of the policies enacted would just let, you know, Venezuelan type of policies enact into the government, giving away the kitchen sink at the cost of the American taxpayers. So I believe we're in the process of saving America. Taking over Washington, D.C. was just an experiment to see if it worked. Obviously, it works, and I hope they can continue this momentum and propel forward for the good of our American body.
You bring up an interesting point. There's an old tactic in politics called getting out in front of something. And a lot of times when you see the other side is having a big success or doing something that's very popular, what you do is you run out there and say, oh, this is what we always wanted to do. Why, of course, we're totally on board with safe streets. And here's our bold plan. It's way better than the other guys to accomplish that. And the Democrats are very conspicuously not doing that in this case, even as Trump racks up just undeniable wins on border security, on immigration, on street safety and so forth. They're not even trying to get out in front of this and say, oh, we believe in all those things too, even though they told us for years that they did. Instead, they're just viciously attacking him every day, and they look like nuts to normal people.
You know, well, the Democrats are chasing the narrative instead of owning it like Donald Trump owns it. You know, we should always defend democracy and protect freedom and always measure by results. What is our outcome? How do we increase performance? That's always the intent of the firm, the intent of a group, the intent of a military body, is how do you measure your results? And that's by performance, whether that's advancing on the battlefield, whether it's training your people, whether it's increasing your test scores, whether if you're living through as a great parent, you're teaching your kids and your kids get straight A's in school. That's how you measure performance. You can measure performance in what he's doing with his experiments to see if things work across the country by if it works, if we get progress. We are getting progress, but through Washington's gridlock and these contrast points that we get from the Democrats, the legal narrative has also pushed back a little bit. We see all these court cases. We see all these advances in the judicial system to try to destroy the positive momentum of the Trump administration. But right now, I believe that Donald Trump has the realm. I believe he has the momentum on his side, and I believe we're going to see more changes come out of Washington that are good. I keep referring to what I see on the news. I'm glued to the news feed the last few days, hoping that another murder does not come in Washington to know that this is working. We're seeing 396 arrests over the last few days. We've seen so many people locked up. We've seen firearms removed from the streets. We've seen illegal immigrants taken away that were criminal immigrants that were driving along the street and were stopped for some activity, such as a license plate on the front of the car, and they're now put in an ICE detainer and put on hold. This is great for the American people. It's going to keep our streets safe. I hope the Democrats will find a way to get on board. One last thing as I close it out. If you look back in the 90s when I was a soldier that joined the Army, President Clinton did a tough on crime initiative, and it worked. The Democrats owned it then. They didn't chase the narrative as they did today. They did an outstanding job under President Clinton of making the rules tougher, where if you committed a crime against an American citizen, that you would be held accountable and you would be put in jail. And it worked. And I hope the Trump administration can move towards those narratives of what we have from the 90s under President Clinton.
That was one thing about Bill Clinton that the Democrats seem to have completely lost, is that he was pretty good about pretending to be engaged with issues that they cared about, or take doing things like a tough on crime initiative. He knew what actually worked with middle Americans, and he was good about plugging into those issues, getting out in front of them. And the modern Democrat Party apparently has no interest whatsoever in doing that. Captain Douglas Ernest, U.S. Army retired Desert Storm veteran and author of The Spirit of a True Patriot, the inspiring story of retired Captain Douglas J. Ernest. Thanks for joining us. We'll be right back.
Substance use and mental health often go hand in hand. Research shows that teens who struggle with their mental health are more likely to use drugs and alcohol. That's why the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention launched the Free Mind campaign to help prevent substance use and overdose among youth ages 12 to 17. As a parent or caregiver, you play a powerful role. Staying connected with your teen can reduce their risk for drug use. Before you talk to them about drugs, talk to them about how they're really doing. And remember, empathy is key. Ask questions. Listen without judgment. Lead with compassion. Let them know they're not alone. Because sometimes, an open and honest conversation between you and your teen can make all the difference. Learn how to start a conversation at cdc.gov/freemind/parents. That's cdc.gov/freemind/parents. Sponsored by the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
It's a well-known fact that guys often skip the doctor when they're sick and delay important health screenings. During Men's Health Month in June, encourage the men in your life to break that bad habit and take charge of their health. Vince Dorsey, a pharmacist and director of medical communications at Esperion Therapeutics, says a great way to start is with a cholesterol test.
The best defense is a good offense. High cholesterol has no symptoms. That's why it's called the silent killer. Don't put it off. Get your cholesterol tested and know your family's health history. You may not realize it, but high cholesterol can be an inherited genetic condition, putting otherwise healthy people, even in their 20s, at risk for heart disease. If you have high LDL or bad cholesterol, it is best to address this as soon as possible. There are ways to lower these levels, reducing your risk of heart attack or stroke.
If you or someone you love has high LDL cholesterol, your doctor may recommend lifestyle changes and medication to keep it in check. Visit heart.org to learn more.
Hi, it's Practical Polly's radio show. If you're just figuring out that healthier cooking oils are better than solid fats, you may be asking, now what am I going to do with all these tubs of lard? Ever had one of those moments when your favorite skinny jeans feel too tightly tailored? Generously apply lard to your hips and thighs and those fancy pants will slide on like a dream. Or here's a family-friendly idea. How about making your yard into a lard fun park? Frost your driveway with a nice thick coating and give those kiddos a downhill thrill no matter what time of year. Having a bad hair day? Yep. A little lump of lard can tame your flyaways in a jiffy. So there's no need for that lard to go to waste or to your waste. But get your best heart-healthy trade-up with healthier oils like canola, olive, or other vegetable oils, which can actually lower your chances for heart disease. Now that's a tip worth keeping for life. Learn more at heart.org/facethefats. Canola Info is the national supporter of the American Heart Association's Face the Fats campaign.
Steven.
Who said that?
Me, down here.
What are you, a yellow booger?
I'm a banana slug, Steven.
Well, what are you doing in my room?
I'm your sense of adventure. Don't you remember me? Don't you know that we miss you?
Miss me? Who misses me?
You know, all your friends in the forest. The trees, the pond, that little fort that you made out of branches. We all miss you.
Mom took me to the forest last year.
I'm a slug, Steven. It took me a long time to get here.
Oh, I guess that makes sense.
The forest is not that far away. Have an adventure today. I'm sure your mom would take you.
You're right. I should get out. I want to have fun. Play in puddles, catch frogs, and climb trees. Hey, Mom!
Yeah, hon?
Steven! What is that in your hand?
It's my sense of adventure, Mom. It's telling me we need to get out of the house and have some fun in nature today.
Come to the forest where the more adventurous you lives. Check out discovertheforest.org for cool places nearby. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably.
Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably? It's been 23 minutes since I ate. I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, now tell me what to do. Cannonball! Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp. I can probably hit the green from here.
Probably.
Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober. Yeah, I'm probably okay.
Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Alan Nathan Show. I'm your guest host today, John Hayward, Deputy National Security Editor at Breitbart News. The big story in geopolitics is the U.S. and Russia deadlocked over Ukraine and trying to end the war. Pretty much everything President Trump is doing right now is designed to try to bring pressure to bear against Russia to get them to the negotiating table, and he's been leaning pretty heavily on countries like India.
India has been buying a lot of Russian oil ever since the Ukraine war began because they're getting it at a discounted price. And President Trump, not unreasonably, accuses India of putting a lot of money in Russia's pockets here that's financing the war. And if India would just stop buying Russian oil, well, then Russia would run out of money and Putin would feel like he has no choice but to make peace in Ukraine and end a conflict he can no longer afford. And so far, the Indians have said no dice. They're not going to stop buying oil from Russia. They could, and they could afford it. It would hurt. I mean, they'd lose some discounts they're getting right now, but they could do it. They've demonstrated they could do it. And I think some of those demonstrations are aimed at Russia. I think India is playing both sides here a bit, and some of the moves they've made over the last couple of weeks have been little playful winks to Russia to say, hey, we could go cold turkey on your oil if we really wanted to, so don't you start taking us for granted either. But they haven't been willing to do what President Trump wants them to do. And the latest effort to bring them into line here is this 25% punitive tariff that President Trump put on India. It went into effect today, and that's on top of the 25% they were already paying under President Trump. So they're now paying 50%, which is one of the highest tariff rates in the world. And the idea is that that's going to wipe out the savings they're getting from Russian oil. So you let them chew on those tariffs for a little while, and then you say, okay, now do you think you could stop buying Russian oil to get rid of these tariffs? I don't know if that's going to work. We'll see. The Indians are putting up a fight, and there's reasons for it. And one of the reasons is that India has a very long relationship with Russia, very friendly. India's really been trying to cozy up to the West over the past decade or so. And a lot of that really started under the first Trump administration. They were making the move anyway, but they really liked Trump. The Indian Prime Minister, Narendra Modi, seems like he personally likes Trump a lot. And India started getting a little cozier with the U.S. as they got a little angrier at China, their neighbor and their regional rival. They were having border clashes in the Himalayas, which were not being fought with guns. They didn't arm their border guards because they didn't want it to escalate. So they would occasionally, just big groups of Indians and Chinese soldiers would just run out and beat the crap out of each other with sticks and chains and stuff up in the Himalayas. And that was causing a lot of problems between India and China. But now your critics will say that Trump has reversed all of that progress by being so tough on India, by pushing so hard to get them on board with the anti-Russia strategy, and India's resisting. And India is beginning to make overtures to China, arguably moving closer into Russia's orbit right now. They're upping their commerce with Russia. They're buying more. They're selling more to Russia, increasing their trade volume. And the Indians are out there saying how much they treasure their friendship with the Russians, which goes back to the Soviet Union supporting India when it first became independent from the United Kingdom, and they've never really forgotten that, so they still feel gratitude towards Russia. They use a lot of Russian military hardware, and they tried to expand a bit. They bought a lot of stuff from us. They still are, but they still really depend on Russia a lot, so going cold turkey on Russian military gear would be tough for them to do. So it's a dicey situation, and some of your geopolitical chess players will look at all of that and say, you know, the real winner in all of this is China. China is not directly involved in the Ukraine battle. They keep talking about how they want to be peacemakers, and they have this dumb 12-point peace plan they cooked up a couple of years ago. And I'm not kidding. This peace plan of China's, it's gussied up as an academic white paper with supposedly a ton of scholars that worked on it. But it boils down to, like, point one, stop shooting at each other. Point two, stop trying to conquer each other's territory. I mean, it's that vacuous. And when China first brought it out, even the Russians were almost amused. Like, they dismissed it with kind of a wry smile and some bad jokes they made about China's effort to bring peace. And the Ukrainians, who were a little bit more eager to get anybody's help, were still very politely dismissive of China's efforts. But China really wants to be seen as a peacemaker in all of this. They want to throw some geopolitical power around. They keep saying they'll help guarantee a peace. They keep wanting to invite everybody to China to have peace negotiations. And so far, no dice, no takers there. A Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky a couple days ago came right out and said, no, China is not going to be sending troops to help protect our borders if we make peace with Russia. We don't trust them. Where were they when we needed them? Pretty much literally. He said, hey, when we were begging for help to rein in Russia and China's their top partner, China didn't help us. They didn't bring Russia to heel. All they ever do is talk. So we don't want China. So, you know, it's losing a bit of influence in Ukraine. But in the rest of the world, China is picking up a lot of easy wins here. All the friction, the heat being generated by Trump trying to make peace with Russia, and also Trump's tariff thing, his effort to rebalance trade has alienated some countries, and China is running to those countries. India is one of them, South Africa, another. He's going to those countries and saying, hey, join Team China. You know, we won't do that to you. We're not going to treat you the way Trump does. Now, China has really bad tariffs and protectionist policies for any industry they care about. So you might think the Chinese could easily win this argument and they'd walk out of this a winner. But in fact, whenever somebody like South Africa cozies up to China, they find out, you know, they're already doing everything Donald Trump was doing to you. No matter how much they talk about free trade, if China cares about a domestic industry, they will protect it very firmly. And they will change their minds very suddenly if they abruptly decide they don't need you as a partner anymore and their domestic companies have stolen all of your technology and can now produce whatever it is you used to make. You might find yourself bouncing out of that Chinese market pretty fast. It's happened many, many times before. So it's one of the reasons that China's gains have been somewhat limited. But they still are sitting in an interesting position as the big world power. If you define three, maybe four big world powers, count the Europeans in there together, the European Union, United States, Russia, and China. China is the one that's not involved in this brouhaha in Ukraine. They have no skin in this game. They have very little to lose. They don't really have anything on the ground. And they're not paying any political or economic price to try to bring peace to Ukraine. They talk about it, but that's all they do. Trump, meanwhile, is putting a price on the table. I don't know if the Ukrainians properly appreciate this. I guess they kind of do now. Remember, he had his big blow-up with Zelensky a couple months ago, but now it seems like everybody's more on the same page. And Trump is putting some real muscle and some real treasure behind his efforts to try to get Russia in line with this thing. He's making sacrifices. He's doing things like pressuring the Indians in a way that's going to hurt U.S. trade. It's going to hurt us, but he thinks it's necessary, because India can bring enough pressure to Russia to get them to the table. And that means there's a price to be paid. That means you make the Indians mad. That means you lose some of their business. You lose some diplomatic gains that you made over the years. China is not making any such sacrifices at all. They get to be a complete spectator to everything that's happening in Ukraine. And that's not a bad place to be if you're an aspiring superpower like China is. You're trying to achieve hyperpower status to really make this a one-on-one contest between China and the United States for the position of leading world power in the century to come. And China figures that in the short term, whatever else happens in Ukraine, the game will continue. And China will go into the next turn of that game with more cards in its hands and more chips on its side if it keeps picking up disaffected former U.S. trade partners and disaffected former U.S. diplomat allies. And meanwhile, if Trump doesn't win in Ukraine, if he doesn't make peace, if he doesn't get a deal, if he doesn't stop the fighting, then the U.S. made all those sacrifices really for nothing, with nothing to show for it. And China would like that. That would be a great outcome for them. That might be what happens. So far, the talks are ongoing, but nobody's really running to the table to sign a ceasefire. And both Ukraine and Russia keep doing things every time it looks like a deal is taking shape. They keep making a new demand or a new statement or comment that botches it. And I would say over the last couple of weeks, if you want to score this thing as fairly as possible, that's more Russia than Ukraine. Ukraine was messing up the deal a lot before that. But now Russia keeps coming up every day and saying, oh, by the way, we demand this, we demand that. And everything that they add to the pile is a no deal type of a thing, like a red line that Ukraine is never going to do. So it's possible that another couple of weeks go by, another month or so, and Trump comes out of this with no deal on the table for Russia-Ukraine. Maybe he will, maybe he'll get it. But if he doesn't, and if you're China, you're probably at this point betting it's more likely than not that he doesn't get this big grand peace deal he's looking for, then you go into the next turn of the great geopolitical game with the U.S. having spent a lot of its energy trying to accomplish something that it do. And now you as China can step into the rest of the world and take your position as the new hegemonic power and pick up everybody that was disaffected by the U.S., everybody that was hit with tariffs, everybody that was hit with demands that they had to do everything possible to pressure Russia to make peace in Ukraine. It didn't work. And now you're China and you're sitting pretty at that point, which is kind of ironic because China had a lot of problems going into this last couple of years. Their economy is faltering in a big way. It's much, much worse than the Chinese government is willing to admit. They have some internal systemic problems like the real estate market that are really grim, you know, that could really blow up in their faces at any time. The Chinese people are not happy. There's been a lot of unrest in China over the last year or so, a lot more demonstrations. It used to be impossible to even imagine that people would show up in protest. But something will happen, like an atrocity at a school or some act of abuse, and the Chinese people turn out and protest in numbers that never seemed possible before. So they definitely go into the balance of this century with a lot of problems they have to deal with. But right now, it looks to me like they're betting that Trump is not going to get what he wants out of Ukraine and Russia. And if Trump does, well, then it's a whole new card game. And we'll have to see how the coming years, the rest of the Trump administration plays out. I'm John Hayward, Deputy National Security Editor for Breitbart News, sitting in for Alan today. We'll be right back with more of the Alan Nathan Show.
We have an active government relations program. They're very much involved in legislative work to not only improve the ADA, but to strengthen enforcement. The bottom line is, a law with no enforcement is no law at all. But it's not just about legislative work. It's really just about public education. We want the general public, we want policymakers, we want business owners to understand that they have a role in knocking down barriers and making the world more accessible. We have an active campaign going on right now. Barriers still exist. If you go to our website, pva.org, you can find information about various types of barriers that are out there through our PSAs. We have a petition that we want to send to the United States Congress that calls for improved enforcement of the ADA. And ultimately, we just want to get everyone in the game. We want everyone to have a stake in knocking down the barriers that still exist, because we believe in accessibility for all. To learn more, you can go to pva.org/barriersstillexist.
We know summers are packed with activities, and Whataburger's got you covered with big flavor and big value. For a limited time this summer, you can order more for less with our bigger, better bundles. Just order your favorite Whatameal, and you can add on a bonus meal. You can add on a $4 kids Whatameal, a $5 double meat junior Whatameal, or $6 nine-piece Whata wings. Or if you're just feeding the kids, these bundles work for kids meals too. Just order a kids meal, and you can add on another one for just $4. Really is the perfect way to make sure everyone is fed and happy this summer. We've also got Whataburger's brand new Prickly Pear Raspberry Water Fresher. It's a bright, refreshing mix of zesty lemon, real raspberry, and a hint of prickly pear. If you haven't downloaded the app yet, download it now. We are full on into our summer of savings mode, and we've got really special things coming up for our 75th birthday on August 8th. For more information, you can visit Whataburger.com.
Dear John, I was hoping it wouldn't come to this, but you've left me no choice. I'm leaving. Uncontrolled high blood pressure is really serious, and lately you seem to really not care. I've been there for you since day one, and I know you think I'm gonna keep ticking. But no, my friend, I can quit whenever I want. Why can't we get back to the good times, when we were more active and ate more healthy foods, and you checked on me every once in a while? Is that too much to ask? I don't want to leave, but unless you stop ignoring me, what else am I supposed to do? Remember, when I quit, you quit. Sincerely, your heart.
Listen to your heart and don't let it quit on you. Doing the minimum to control your high blood pressure isn't doing enough. High blood pressure can lead to a stroke, heart attack, or death. Get your blood pressure to a healthy range before it's too late. For help keeping yours at a healthy range, text PRESSURE to 97779. A message from the American Heart Association, the American Stroke Association, and the Ad Council.
You know that feeling? Like every door is closing and you just can't see a way out? Being unemployed, underemployed, or just out of school feels a lot like that. But when you find the right tools, suddenly everything just clicks. Getting on that path may be easier than you think. A good place to start? Go to findsomethingnew.org. At findsomethingnew.org, you have access to resources that help develop new skills. Skills that will position you for careers in today's growing industries. From healthcare and manufacturing to cybersecurity and alternative energy. Plus, you can take advantage of online courses, certification programs, apprenticeships, and more. So you can take yourself from unemployed and uncertain to empowered and prepared for what's next. Find your path to a new career today. Visit findsomethingnew.org. A message from the Ad Council.
I'm Ben Affleck, and I want to thank you for joining me and supporting Paralyzed Veterans of America. Our vets need you.
I'm a quadriplegic. I'm definitely at risk with my diminished lung capacity.
I have MS. I'm in a wheelchair and I can't leave the house because I have a compromised immune system.
I'm very concerned about, would there be a bed for me? Would there be a ventilator for me? Would I be able to survive something?
It's just heavy. You know, it's a heavy moment. This is a war. This really is.
Our veterans fought for us. Let's fight for them.
I am so grateful for the PVA. They're making sure that we have all of the food and supplies that we need right now.
We all gotta help each other right now. We can't get through this by ourselves.
It's with profound gratitude that you're gonna be saving our lives. To find out how you can help, please go to helppva.org. That's helppva.org.
Welcome back to the Alan Nathan Show. I'm your guest host today, John Hayward, Deputy National Security Editor at Breitbart News. Now, we began the show by reporting that there was a terrible mass shooting event at a Catholic church in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Here with us to talk about it is Stephen Williford, the archetypical good guy with a gun who stopped the deadliest mass shooting in Texas history in 2017. Welcome to the Alan Nathan Show.
Thanks for having me on, John. Appreciate it.
This is a really recent event, so it's really still happening on the scene, as they say. We're still getting very limited details. But from what I understand, it looks like it was a lone perpetrator, a male, who for some reason just opened fire on the church and was spraying people with pepper spray in addition to shooting them. And then when he was surrounded by the police, he took his own life. Does that jibe with your understanding of what's happening?
As far as we know, that's understanding. Now, understand, too, that this close into it, then you're going to hear a lot of things that aren't necessarily true, but that's what we know of as of yet, what's been reported.
That's kind of my caution to everyone at the outcome of the show, too, at the beginning, is that you're going to hear a lot of stuff, just be a lot of buzz on social media. Take it easy. Wait for the details to come out. Don't jump to any conclusions. So we still don't know very much about this. But one thing we could say by looking at the site is that this is about the softest target you can get. Shooters tend to gravitate towards soft targets. And spraying bullets through the stained glass window of a church is just heinous activity, but also a classic example of picking a soft target for your attack.
Absolutely. They say 94% of all mass shootings happen where? In gun-free zones, where they know they'll not have any armed resistance. Sutherland Springs, it was very much the same. He was shooting through stained glass windows into the walls and windows of a church, and that was over a 100-year-old church. And, you know, we need to start understanding that you can't stop. You know, a bad guy with a gun can choose a time and the place, and you can't stop him from starting. What you can do is make it where it's not a gun-free zone, and the churches need to be aware of this, and they need to be Johnny on the spot. They need to have teams to be able to take it on, and I know in Minnesota, the laws are such that probably cannot happen. But, you know, look at, for instance, the South Freeway Church of Christ in White Settlement, where Jack Wilson, within 6 seconds of it starting, stopped a mass shooter because they have had a team together to do so. And, you know,
that's something I think you see. Exactly. And I think you've seen more of that lately after there were some church shootings in the last few years. Now you see churches that will actually have some kind of security on site, or they will even allow people to conceal carry in or around the church because they want the good guy with a gun to be there. And that's not likely to be the case anytime soon in Minneapolis, I would imagine, given the political climate there. But what else could you do in a case like this? I haven't heard anything about the weapon that was used yet, and that's going to be one of the things that's in the rumor mill right now as people theorize and hypothesize. But just on the surface of it, shooting through the windows of a church at people sitting in the pews, you could do that with a pretty typical semi-automatic handgun. You don't need any heavy artillery to pull off an atrocity like this.
Yeah, you can do it with a handgun. You can do it with a shotgun. You can do it with a rifle. It really doesn't make any difference. And understand when you're talking about what kind of weapon. That really doesn't make any difference. Dead is dead. And understand that more people are beat to death with hammers every year than rifles in general. So what matters is the heart of the person that's responding, or the heart of the person that is shooting the place up. You know, we have a sickness in this country right now, and I don't know what the result is. It may be that you know, these people, they spend their whole lives on their on the internet and stuff, and they, you know, the old term, the old computer term, garbage in, garbage out. You know, what are they looking at? What are they feeding their minds and stuff? And also with the psychotropic drugs, it almost every time that one of these shootings happen, it, you know, it's tied to they were on some kind of psychotropic drug and stuff. It's never the gun's fault. And the good guy with a gun, you know, has the correct heart. He's a sheepdog. He or she is a sheepdog. It would stop the shooting. You know, please go to gunowners.org, sign up, get in the fight for your rights. And, you know, gun-free zones, and I'm not trying to advocate to anybody to break the law. But I will tell you, when I walk into a gun-free zone, it ceases to be a gun-free zone. There's at least one gun there, because I will not subject my family to not being able to have anyone to defend them when I'm there.
And when I was taking concealed carry training myself, they covered things like this, and they pointed out that having the good guy with the gun changes the whole strategic situation, because now the shooter doesn't know which person in that crowd is going to be the good guy with the gun. You're turning the element of surprise against the perpetrator, and that can buy enough time to save some lives.
In almost every situation, when the second gun shows up to the gunfight, the killing stops. You know, when the second gun shows up, maybe the perpetrator gets shot, but the killing stops. He will either flee or in this case, will commit suicide. And so many of these people are already suicidal anyway, you know. And so when the second gun shows up, then the killing of innocent life usually ends right there.
Now, a lot of people will talk about social media, the internet, and I'm sure we'll find out a lot about this perpetrator and what websites he was visiting and so on in the days to come. But I have a little different take on that. I don't know if it's just a question of the internet radicalizing people or driving them to violence. I'm sure that happens a little. But I really think a huge problem here is that the internet destroys the other human connections they might have had that would be healthy, that could pull them away from this. When people are on the keyboard and the phone all the time, they're not talking to people that could maybe show them a better way or help them deal with their demons.
Exactly. We grew up in a culture where guns were everywhere, where we hunted all the time, and you know, rural America is still a little bit that way. But the problem is nowadays so many kids grow up in their mom and dad's basement playing video games and talking to people on the internet, and they don't have any real communication skills in the real world.
And communication skills, human connections, just the warmth of human beings. And I would have to also say that they're not necessarily just talking to people on the internet anymore, because now they have these AI chatbots, and some of those are encouraging bizarre behavior when people talk to them. So it's a strange new world we find ourselves in. Stephen Williford, spokesman for Gun Owners of America and the Good Guy with the Gun, author of the book A Town Called Sutherland Springs, Faith and Heroism Through Tragedy. I'm John Hayward. Thanks very much for joining us today on this hour of the Alan Nathan Show.
The opinions you hear on the Main Street Radio Network are those of the host, callers, and guests, and not necessarily those of the station, Main Street Radio Network, its management, or advertisers. The information on the Main Street Radio Network does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. So please, consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions or comments about Main Street Radio Network, contact us at 703-719-0433 or at our website, mainstreetradionetwork.com.